Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Bog. Every single week on Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern, right here on DLive.tv/Dave Martell. Tonight, we are going to do a review of the very popular game just came out. People are really excited about it. Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Everybody's asking, you know, is this accurate? Is this good? Is this something that I should be able to play? Is this something that's going to make me puke? So we're going to do a full review of it, talking about it. I haven't played it, but all these guys have played it. So we are going to dig right in, talk about the theology, philosophy, history, you know, all that, whether or not it's accurate, whether or not it's a big hot piece of dog crap. So we're going to talk about all of that. But before we get started, man, you guys all know Neil John. Go over to Facebook.com/IronAgeJodish and check out some authentic Vedic astrology. Man, this stuff is so cool. So go over to Facebook.com/IronAgeJodish and see what the stars have to say about you. And tell them Big Dave sent you. Go over there, tell them Big Dave sent you. Go check them out. If you like The Bog, you want to support The Bog, go over to Patreon.com/TheBog and go sign up. There's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. So you can get an RSS feed of the audio of every single show that we do so you can listen to on your commutes, in your car, at the gym, or at work. Patreon.com/TheBog. There's a tier from everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. Go check it out. Help us keep the lights on. We appreciate it. So, also, if you want to support The Bog and get some sweet merch, go over to shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop, and you can go check out the awesome merch selection that we got there. T-shirts, hats, backpacks, everything you can think of, phone cases, there's camping mugs, whatever you can think of that comes out of merchandise stuff. We got it over there. It's an absolutely massive collection. Top-notch stuff, man. Stuff that's made in America. You know, I did a lot of research. I found a good distributor, creator that was going to help us distribute merchandise that makes good, high-quality stuff. I got a t-shirt that's a blend. There's maternity shirts. There's even, like, dresses for the ladies and all kinds of stuff, artisan chef aprons. So make sure to go to check it out at shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop. So without further ado, let's get started. Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Let's start with Tristan. Firstly, Merry Yule, everybody. You know, Yule's coming up. Merry Yule, everybody. And let's get started talking about Assassin's Creed. What's up, Mr. Tristan?
Oh, it is the Yule season, as everyone has been so carefully reminding me as of late. Yeah. I happen to be a Halloween man myself, and yuck, that's been going around the circle.
Everybody shame Tristan in the chat. Shame. This is, you know, I'm a Santa Lord, man. I'm Santa gang. I'm Yule gang all the way. Halloween is like, it's corny. You know, we should do a big debate about this. We should have like blood sports, Halloween versus Yuletide. And obviously Yuletide's going to win, but we should do that. So before we get arguing about which holiday is better and the answer is Yule, let's talk about Assassin's Creed Valhalla, Tristan.
So, right, this is a very interesting new game, just recently came out a couple weeks ago, and me and Ian happened to grab it so we could review it for everyone, considering it's a very pertinent topic to what we do around here. It's
I don't have it. It's of our Andre. Folk.
Oh, I'm sorry, not Ian, it was Andre I meant. So, yeah, it's a very pertinent topic that, you know, we always do here. It's set in the Danelaw period of England, and some parts of it in Norway during that time period. And you, of course, play as a Viking in this one, in which people familiar with the Assassin's Creed series will generally understand the general gameplay elements here. It's mostly like an open-world action sort of game where you play a warrior who has, you know, the ability to assassinate people and stuff like that. You have ability to trek all around the world, map, and do whatever you want, kill a bunch of people, find chests full of hidden loot.
So raid the open world thing.
Screw your book. Right, it's an open world RPG sort of thing. You know, that sort of game experience. But in this one, it's set with a Nordic setting in mind, which makes it very interesting.
So I got a real quick question for you guys go off about the, you know, it's a Nordic setting. I haven't played it, so I'm assuming there's English speakers that are speaking in like a Norse accent. I want to ask Andre, how do you feel about their accent and how maybe they're speaking the Norse languages? How do they sound like to you?
What I found interesting was that initially I was not exactly overwhelmed with the results, but as I progressed further into the game, Some of the accents started to sound really convincing, and they do have legit, like, Norse dialogue, and it sounds very natural. And after looking up the voice actors for several of the different characters that do speak, be that normal NPCs or story characters and so forth, there's actually quite a bit of Nordic voice actors, including Norwegians, Swedes, and Icelanders, that have been called in. There are some very obvious ones where some major story characters who are supposed to be Norse are blatantly English. That can be a bit jarring at times, but as a general rule, I actually found it somewhat convincing. It didn't sound like Skyrim, that's for sure.
Yeah, Ian, you were going to say something? I'm sorry before I cut you off.
Oh, I was just going to say it's kind of like the type of game it is like an action RPG in the sense that it's kind of like a hack and slash type of deal, but you have more investment in your character in terms of the gear you can wear and like the choices you make. Like they can correct me if I'm wrong, but there's like different moral choices that affect the outcome of certain things.
Right. I would describe it as RPG light. There's some choice aspects to the dialogue trees and everything. That's pretty good, but it's not like an old school CRPG, like, you know, Baldur's Gate or something, where you just build your character. It's much you do have aspects you can influence your character's build and specialize into certain aspects of gameplay, but it's more of an RPG light experience than it is a real full fledged RPG.
Yeah, and unlike Skyrim, there's probably not too much emphasis on taking an arrow to the knee.
You could theoretically take an arrow to your knee, but I'm not sure they have the dialogue for that. But
then you wouldn't be an adventurer anymore. So
right.
So looking at the gameplay, just like looking at it, I'm not getting this game, to be honest with you guys. Just looking at this game, it looks like For Honor mixed with Diablo 3.
I like Diablo 3, but they're pretty different. Assassin's Creed Origins, Odyssey, and Valhalla, like, granted, I haven't played Valhalla, but they all seem to share the same similar kind of gameplay attributes, and that you can kind of elect to be more of a sneaky assassin, like doing the missions, or frankly, you can just go rampage and just slaughter people, which is what I did in Origins, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, I would say gameplay-wise, it's almost entirely a reskin of Odyssey. If you've played Odyssey, then you know exactly what you're in for. I mean, if you want to compare it to some other games that are similar, the Shadows of Mordor series is that's also very, very similar to this. And also the Batman Arkham games are kind of similar.
So it's like it's like an action adventure with RPG elements.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Okay.
And stealth stuff, too. So it's not like full-on Metal Gear Solid stealth game, but you can elect to do that. The past games, you didn't really get a choice, but the last few, they've let people kind of have more freedom, which I think is a good thing.
Well, yeah, there has been some complaints regarding the whole stealth mechanic, because that's been a staple of the Assassin's Creed genre, but it used to basically be an auto-win button if you use sneak attacks. They kind of toned that down a little bit, but in order comparison, you compared it to For Honor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks very much like that, but it's nothing like that at all, because For Honor allows you a greater deal of control to do more flashy finishers and combat and so forth. In Assassin's Creed Valhalla, it's mainly just, you know, you press the buttons, and sometimes there's a small cutscene that plays that shows that you kill the enemy. You don't have that much control except for, like, dodge, parry, and attack.
For Honor is also kind of arcadey, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's much more of an arcade experience than For Honor.
I actually liked For Honor. I liked For Honor, except for, you know, obviously what I'm going to talk about now. I have not played the game. However, I've seen quite a few screenshots, and I'm not like an expert. I'm not a HEMA guy. But I had a short stint in the SCA, and I've done a little bit of studying of historically accurate garb and armor and stuff like that. And I'll come out and say this: the armor and the weaponry and like is not accurate. It's not accurate.
No, it's cartoonish.
It's very much not accurate. It's very much a Hollywood chic Viking look.
Yeah, which I disdain as a generality. But absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Valhalla was pretty good about that, wasn't it? I mean, it's not like, you know, perfectly accurate. You know, everyone's wearing lamellar or, you know, a scale mail or, you know, chain hauberks, but it was pretty accurate to the period, more or less, right?
In Valhalla, the actual game?
Yeah.
No. That's what I was talking about, is the Hollywood chic Viking look.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely heavy on its focus on trying very hard to look like Vikings, the TV series.
Very much so.
Biker look.
I should have said so. I was talking about the Saxons. I heard the Saxons are pretty accurate.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, in the way they look, they generally look fairly accurate. You know, the run-of-the-mill Saxon guardsman that you'd kill is pretty accurate. But it's when you get to the unique characters or something of that sort where it starts to break down.
Like, what example would you give?
Well, you know, for instance, they have the trailer version of Alfred the Great, and he's attired in a manner in which basically no Christian king, major king at the time, would actually be wearing. His soldier guardsman doesn't actually have real armor. It has that leather biker look everywhere. They don't have any sort of capes or brooches or anything of that sort. It's very much a Hollywood representation of what medieval period looked like.
Yeah,
but when it comes to certain things like all the types of weapons too. Of course, this is a minor gripe, but it's still a gripe that some people would have. Is that, for instance, a lot of like the elite Saxon swordsmen? I don't remember exactly what they're called, but they're really big. They also wear a mishmash of leather armor, fur, and chainmail, and it's not logically placed. And they always wield two-handed swords.
And to be clear, two-handed swords in this time period and the place just didn't exist.
Well,
Vikings didn't have massive two-handed claymores, and neither did Saxons.
Well, I mean, you're right, but slight amendment I would say to that is that if you were particularly large and you had a sword made for you, it would probably be larger than the average kind of stock, you know, Ulfbert pattern sword. And also, I mean, you could, in theory, if you had a particularly large grip, you could have a longer handle. It wouldn't be like a claymore or a greatsword. It's still functionally different. It would be more like a hand and a half sword, but that would be pretty rare.
What I mean is that culturally, these people didn't have a fighting style based around a long sword with two-handed
You're arguing it from a speculative point of view here, in the case that maybe it happened like once or twice, but it definitely wasn't a pattern.
Although they've found archaeological finds of swords that are longer than like the typical one, but they're not genuine like long swords that you would go around smacking pikes and like hitting someone with plate armor with.
They're just longer than the norm arming sword.
Yeah, right. At this point in history, there is no plate armor yet. They don't have plate armor at this point.
Romans had it, but it's entirely different.
They didn't really have. That's a whole other discussion. What they had, what we understand to be plate armor, when you look at late medieval, we're talking 14th, 15th century, like knights. That technology doesn't even exist yet, and the idea of having these big, giant, two-handed swords, metal, iron, was not abundant enough for them to be producing weapons like that. Number one,
it would be unnecessary too.
Yeah, it would be unnecessary. So I'm looking at these, you know, these pictures just right in front of me now. First of all, the armor this drives me insane. The fur. There's no cloaks. Like it's just the biker leather
that
stuff.
That was a pet peeve of mine. Your entire raiding crew, when you get your longship, is almost no one has chainmail. I mean, these do not look like people who are seasoned warriors who expect to be in battles constantly. Well, they're attired in like biker leather and furs and shit just to give them a bite.
It's the Hollywood myth of the barbarian. It's like how even like late Roman period Germans are still depicted in like furs and like pieces of leather with like bronze axes and stuff. And it's like they've been fighting as Roman soldiers for like three centuries. They obviously have access to like spatha swords and, you know, chainmail. Granted, it's not like everyone's going to have it, but if you were an actual like military lifestyle raider or soldier kind of thing, you're probably going to have at least a hauberk at some point or something like that.
And the weapons here are absolutely ridiculous. You know, the main with the guy wielding two axes, nobody wields two axes. That's stupid. Number two, the main weapon of the Germanic people throughout all of time is the spear. In fact, the word German German means spear man. Germania means land of the spearmen. These were people, the spear was like your rifle, and you had a sword, and that was almost like your sidearm. And if you did have a sword, you would be more likely to have an axe or a club or something of that nature.
Well, the long knife, like where the Saxon, you were ever going to have a weapon in your offhand, it wouldn't be another like sword or axe. It would be a long knife if you did that period, and that probably wouldn't be a thing.
And to be fair, one of the changes in the this Assassin's Creed title is that from past titles is that they've actually introduced one-handed axes, and you can also equip a shield with a normal, like an axe or a sword, or they even have spears now where you can actually equip a spear, and some of the enemy guardsmen have spears and whatnot, so that's actually pretty accurate.
Are there at-gears?
The interesting thing I want to note regarding the weapon selection in that game that really irked me was because I spent hours trying to figure out, like, why couldn't I, like, get a sword? I wanted a sword, like a long sword. Because you have axes, you have maces, you have spears, you have Dane axes, you have all, like, the big weapons. You even have, like,
hammers,
like morning flail. Stars and flails and stuff like that. But you don't have a long sword.
Hold up. What?
There's flails.
Flails were really irksome to me as well.
Why do they have weapons designed for killing knights in. I don't know.
But yes, as I said, like the Saxon soldiers and some of the Norse soldiers, they do have swords, like long swords, and you can clearly see that they're like Nordic inspired. But you, as a main character, you're not allowed to wear the sword. You're not allowed to use it.
Wait, what?
You can use a two-handed sword, but you can't use a one-handed sword.
There's no one-handed swords in the game at all.
No, the
I
only
haven't
exception
actually run under one.
That's stupid as hell.
It doesn't exist. I looked it up. It doesn't exist.
That's so stupid as hell.
The weapons.
I just assumed that I haven't gotten it.
So the weapons
that were
used in this period, we're talking late Iron Age, we're talking, you know, during the Viking Age specifically, because these are Vikings, which starts about the 700s or 900s and leads up to about, it was like 1030 or something like that. Like the
1066 is generally the academic end of the era. I would say in terms of actual activity, not just, you know, what historians pick, it's like 750 to 1100 is about the Viking Age.
Yeah. So during this time period, this is a period of nimble weapons. This is not a time period where they're carrying. Besides the Dane axe, most of their weapons are going to be light because they travel so much. You're not going to be.
And a good point.
Yeah.
You can actually equip a Dane axe, and that's what I've been playing with most of my playthrough. It's very satisfying. A lot of the animations when you kill people are brutal. It's fun just ripping through people with a Dane axe.
Dane axe was a really brutal weapon, but Dane axe was not really a common weapon. This was the age of sword and board, of spear and board. This was an age where shield wall was your number one battle tactic. This is a time where you fought as a unit. There were special units. Everybody knows about the berserkers. There were, you know, shock troops, effectively. But the whole purpose of the berserkers was they would send them into a town, and they would disperse everybody and scare everybody, and the people would run out, and they would directly run right into shield walls where they would get hit with spears. The Vikings and the Norsemen, they weren't stupid. They were very nimble fighters. They were very talented fighters. They had skill in martial arts and stuff. So this idea that they were just hulking retards just swinging gigantic weapons is just nonsense.
Well, and, you know, that's actually one of the interesting aspects of the game that was really irksome to me, even though I kind of expected it to go like that, was that they basically go with a giant, massive, brawling free-for-all whenever you're in a combat. No one uses unit tactics. No one gropes together. You don't have shield walls. And especially when you're talking about Vikings going up to raid like a monastery or against some Saxon fortification or something, historically, the reasons Vikings did so well was because they were massively better trained and equipped and just, you know, they had warrior experience that a lot of normal peasants in Europe just didn't have.
They were professional military people, where the average Saxon feared was just a bunch of like freeman farmers who had enough money to get like a spear, a shield, and like some light armor and assemble when their lord calls upon them. And the thing, to add to your point about the shock troops, Dave, a lot of times, you know, because it wasn't just their preferred battle tactic. It was like the shield wall and like the boar's head formation was the primary method of waging war in the migration era and, you know, the larger battles of the Viking Age. So really, aside from cavalry, which would have been used for skirmishing, for flanking, but because horses were, you know, not common and kind of expensive, that wasn't really a thing they did. And also they functioned more like dragoons in the sense that they would ride to battle, dismount, and then fight on foot rather than fighting with what we would think of as cavalry.
How the Norsemen fought Viking in this era looked more like a Roman legion than it does some wild horde of guys.
If you think about it, that's where they got their learned experience because, you know, for centuries they had just waged war with each other and against Gauls. And then after their collision with Rome, they took a lot from that exchange, you know, militarily, especially as from centuries of service as foediarii and whatnot. But so you can really see that display itself during, you know, the Germanic age in Europe as, you know, these Germanic kingdoms and stuff form as they colonize new areas. But so these, you know, the shark troops would often be at the front of those shield wall formations or contained in reserves to be unleashed like a pack of dogs. And so you would want to break the enemy shield wall, break their formation, form a gap, widen the gap, you know, make them run and then cut them down as they flee. That's exactly what happened at Hastings.
Yeah.
So the berserkers would basically punch a hole in that gap, or they'd create the gap, punch a hole in the shield wall. They'd file in, and because of their unrepentant savagery and, you know, bloodlust, they'd start causing a ruckus. And then, you know, like dominoes, it starts to fold in on itself. And then the shield wall starts to gain the edge against the enemy shield wall until they turn and run. And that was the basic order of battle in this era.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in that case, you see none of that in this game. There's nothing. It's a free-for-all brawl where everyone is just fighting one-on-one. And that's it, more or less. No matter, even when you have like larger pitched battles, it's still like just a mishmash of troops. Even sieges, it's just a mishmash of troops. No formations, no real strategy. It's just like rush the walls, get up the walls, kill the dudes, and then you're finished.
It very much goes hard on the barbarian Hollywood idea of you just being stronger than them.
The problem really with this kind of thing, in my opinion, is that it energizes the kind of people in our community that I really feel should not be energized. You know, the kind of people that think that this religion is about, you know, wearing fur, drinking meat out of a horn, like Dave said, saying hail at their campfire, when, you know, that's a lot of like that biker pagan aesthetic that we don't really want to encourage because it's ahistorical and frankly almost kind of dishonoring to the ancestors, and that you misrepresent them as a bunch of savages.
Yeah.
It's incredibly insulting when you get right down to it.
Yeah. And we had this discussion, you know, many, many times. Our ancestors were not barbarians like the Hollywood and the Silicon Valley and all of these people put forth. They weren't like this. They were polished, sophisticated, well-trained. First of all, they were well-trained, organized, polished, sophisticated soldiers that had superior tactics and cunning and technology during a time where, you know, the opponents in Europe did not. And the fact that they, you know, when you see them in Hollywood, they're rolling around in the mud and they're all drunk and stupid. And that's not accurate. You know, we were talking a couple days ago that one of the biggest insults to a kid, like somebody back in those times, in ancient Germanic times, was to get somebody's clothes dirty. You know, you got somebody's clothes dirty, it's time for a fight.
Well, they were allowed to kill you over it. Yeah,
that was something that you actually see quite a bit in the game as well, because if you're just like casually strolling around like the towns in Norway, which is like obviously only Norse, it's dirty, it's dingy, people are dressed in dirty clothing and so forth. And these were a people who took great pride in their appearance. They groomed themselves quite extensively. They changed clothes almost daily, if your sources are to be believed, and they have regular days set off just purely for cleaning and bathing. These were an incredibly clean people, so getting someone's clothes dirty, as Tristan said, you could kill somebody for that.
And their clothes were expensive, too.
Danes, in Danelaw, which is where this is all set, they regarded the Saxons as being dirty and beneath them. Like, it wasn't just herder, I beat you in a fight, I'm king of York now, I'm better than you. It was literally like they went to conquer them, and much like the Anglo-Saxons conquering the Celtic Britons, they got there and they kind of looked around and thought, wow, you guys are dirty, living in hovels and in mud huts. Right. What the hell?
These are right. That's exactly what it was. To them, these were backwoods savages who don't even know how to bathe.
Yeah, it was almost like in a modern American context, without any offense meant to anyone. It's almost like as if a bunch of like hygienic, like well-to-do people from a community went to like backwoods, like swampland, and just were like, oh, wow, you people are like our cousins. That's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah. And, you know, it's with the getting dirty thing and the stuff that, you know, our ancestors, they were, and I say this a lot, our ancestors had more in common with like Tony Soprano than they do with like Ragnar from the Vikings TV show. You know, I mean, they were very colorfully dressed. Cool. They had a lot of jewelry. They wore fine linens and silks and had great trade networks and tight family units, effectively mafias. They operated effectively in mafias. They were more like Tony Soprano than Ragnar in the Vikings TV show.
Maybe not Tristan, because the actor's Irish.
One thing I will mention that I actually did like it was the way that especially like Norse buildings and such were portrayed, because often when you see these typical Scandinavian towns and TV shows and whatever, they're gray, they're rocky, and they're made of wood and nothing else. But they actually put quite a bit of effort into making a lot of the houses decorated, as well as painted in many cases, especially things like temples and longhouses were painted.
The stave style of architecture is absolutely beautiful. It's my favorite. And granted, most of the examples of it today are like, you know, Norwegian and Swedish churches and stuff. But like the old stave buildings, kind of like what they have in like... that one town in Skyrim on the plains, Whiterun. But that kind of architecture with like the dragon heads and like horse heads, stuff like that. It's just absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, I do have to say graphically for the game, the stave temples and the long halls and all that sort of thing, the artwork is actually very beautiful. And it's even almost very realistic, except I do have to say they have a tendency to make everything a lot more grandiose. All the halls are extremely large. Some random temple you'll find is like as big as you would expect like a major religious site to be. But they just do that for, you know, making everything exaggerated, because in reality things are a lot more small and provincial. And
plus side to that, though, honestly, is it kind of gives people you know, something like dream big. You know, that didn't exist historically, because for our ancestors and their communities it wasn't really that important or necessary.
It's not even to say that it didn't exist historically. They're not like impossible buildings or anything. It's just like some random temple you'd find in Norway on a mountaintop is basically the sort of temple you would expect to find at like the main temple civilization in Uppsala.
Yeah, I just like to see that kind of thing depicted, though. Like the idea of like these like huge like Norse pagan towns is just cool to me. Mostly because I want to see that in our own time.
And I'll tell you,
I mean, it's definitely cool.
And I'll tell you, I did see like one of the animations and it depicted one of the longships. I did think that was cool because it really depicted how large some of these longships really were. Yeah,
like the Drakkar. Wasn't that like the double decker one or something like that?
You know, that was one of my pet peeves for the game, is that the longship you actually get only crews like maybe a dozen people. It's very, very tiny. Wait, it's almost insultingly tiny.
That's not even a longship, though. Like
it's pretty bad.
Longship is a classification of ships. It's more of about the method of construction rather than its size. And the ship that you actually use would be accurate for some types, but it would be more aligned along the lines of a riverboat / ferry. It's called a knarr, and it was used as a trading vessel mostly.
What's it called again?
Knarr.
Knarr.
You know, I don't even think that's actually a knarr that you're using. I think it's a snekja would be what our ancestors would have called it.
Possibly.
Even a carvey, actually, because it might be that small.
This is a dangerous topic with Andre around. Yeah. I'll say that.
Right? I mean, Andre talked about this, I believe it was on the Norway show, about how advanced the longship actually was. This is a ship. This was not only the fastest ship in antiquity, but it's like still reigns today as the fastest non-motorized ship ever made.
It was the first blue water ship, too, really. I mean, before that, Europeans, unless you believe the whole Lost Roman expedition thing, they were restricted to more or less coastal travel. But with those ships, you know, that really date back in terms of their kind of archetype to the Saxon period in like the 450s and such, those ships are capable of going to North America.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. One thing that I do want to mention regarding ships, I will not dwell on this too much because I can fill up 3 hours alone on this. It's they mentioned specifically when you go from Norway to England, that the trip will take between 5 to 7 days, which is actually perfectly in line from where you are in Norway, around the Stavanger area of Norway. Going to England would take between 5 and 7 days, depending on the time that where you set out, the tides and the wind and so forth.
Yeah, I've heard it was about a week.
Incredible. So we kind of did an overview of the historical accuracy and some of the gameplay and stuff like that. Speaking of the religion, I would like to get into kind of like how the religion is represented in the game. And if it's something that does it touch into something that is blasphemous or that somebody that is faithful will find offensive? Because I'll be honest with you, nowadays I tend to avoid games that have Norse themes or have Germanic themes or have any sort of theme that represents the antiquity in ancient Northern Europe, because a lot of times it offends me. You know what I mean? Same. Not because I'm being like a wuss or anything about it, but I don't want to see the gods are multicultural. I don't want to see homosexuality with the gods. I don't want to see Marvel stuff. I don't want to see Loki palling around and being a nice likable trickster. I don't want to see that crap. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, it's subversive hell, really.
No, I totally have to agree with you, and I can even sympathize very much with that sort of perspective. If anything in the game that I have to say the best about, it's probably their portrayal of the religion. It's actually very well done. I wouldn't say it's entirely historically accurate, but it's not offensive. It's not utterly, ignorant or uneducated in their portrayal. And they have it threaded through the game in such a way that people just casually remark about doing rituals or this and that and whatever, that you would think that these people actually believe this. There's no like atheist fedora thing going on.
So where it's almost not even a narrative. It's like just part of the natural world that you experience as you go through it.
It's very much like that, except there are actual things where you interact with the religion in a much more direct context. For instance, I've killed several different cultists. I won't really go into it just to spoil people, but you end up interacting with Odin. And it's actually one of my favorite, the word is a theophany. It's called the appearance of a god. It's actually one of my favorite theophanies in fiction at this point, because it's so very well done. It's not offensive at all. It's exactly what you would expect. Like, that's Odin. Yes. I mean, you'll see one of the pictures we have here floating around through the screenshot is a picture of Odin in the game.
I like how they explain the whole like sight thing, with the raven is kind of like almost a Philgia, I guess, because like they're the raven clan. So it's almost like a Philgia, and it follows you around. It's your little raven companion, and it can fly around and like see stuff for you and like give you the knowledge of what's in your surroundings. Pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's I would have to agree with Tristan in this way that the religion, I would say, would be very well handled, because they do actually make it kind of like an effort when you go into Norse settlements and so forth, that the whole religion aspect is so integrated into their society and culture. You see statues. The statues have small bowls of offerings underneath them. People casually remark on things like, rituals. This is something that's important to them, and they kind of slip it into like daily speech as well, kind of like why modern people would say oh Jesus Christ, oh holy God, and stuff like that, except it's much more Norse flavored. It's about the Nordic gods here. It's the Germanic gods.
Yeah, that's that's one thing that I noticed in a lot of entertainment and fiction and stuff like that. They don't do a good job depicting how interwoven religiosity was for our ancestors. And part of it comes from modern people don't understand what it's like to have a primordial worldview. They just don't. We have separation of church and state. People are like, oh, well, that's just my spiritual beliefs, and they keep their religion private. Everything is secular. secularized. Everything is separated. And our ancestors did not do that. They didn't believe like that. Everything in their life was ritualized. Everything in their life flowed through their faith, flowed through their religion. There was nothing that they did that did not have some sort of something to do with faith. Whether it's they're about to build something or do some work and they say a little prayer beforehand or do some galdur, or whether they're making an offering, they do a libation when they first wake up in the morning, or how they stir their stew maybe so many times as part of like a ritual. Everything that they did, life was a ritual period for our ancestors.
One thing,
and the religion is even so woven into the game that the opening trailer when you first start the game is actually just a rephrased, rehashed version of the opening of the Veluspa. And the main character himself will frequently quote from the Havamal during specific situations, you know, just in the course of conversation when he wants to say something wise. And they sometimes don't even call it out that this is, you know, da-la-la-la-la-la-la Froden, right? They don't even, like, push your face into it. It's just something that, of course, I recognize it in-game that, yeah, that was a line from the Havamal that he just said.
Yeah, and there's a couple of instances that I actually feel kind of, like, emphasizes the fact that, you know, this is very interwoven, and it feels very natural. One of them was what Tristan mentioned, that the opening of the game is literally the opening of the Voluspa with the starting of the creation of the world. They're talking about the creation and the beginning of it, and which is, I feel, is a very powerful way to actually start a game that, you know, is set in this time period. Other things, I had an incident in Norway where I kind of stumbled across a dude who was like sitting in the middle of a forest inside a shack, and another guy came up and they started arguing, and this guy was obviously like some sort of hired killer, like a mercenary, and he was going to kill this old man in the forest. And you don't exactly know why. He just says that, you know, he has been decreed by law to do so. Well, you later figure out that this guy that's sitting in the middle of the forest has been charged by the local jarl for committing seder. Because he's a man, he has partaken in a feminine ritual and has therefore considered himself unclean, adigi, and therefore must be put down. This is just casually just something you can stumble upon.
It wasn't the issue that... I was going to say that there's too much, like, grievous insults used as just kind of slang. Like, they like, oh, you're adigi, you're adigi.
I was going to talk about that slightly here. That basically, they tend to use the words ardor and ergi as if they were just gloss translations for like cowardice. They don't really have the same impact that they would in the historical Norse sense. If you in the year 900, if a Viking called another man ergi, this was a serious formal challenge, and someone was going to die. And this one, it's more like two like buddy cops, like, oh yeah, you're a coward. I mean, it just gets thrown around in that sense. But also relating to Seether and the religion aspect of the game, there were a couple issues here that I did find in my playthrough. And there could be more. These are just some of the ones I picked up on. That they do tend to confuse Seether with Galdur and Runed Magic, which is obviously an error. But also and this one, it goes back to Dave's point about something that's actually rather offensive. And when I say it, you will realize why it's offensive. So, a scald in Rigjafjalti relates the story of the Æsir-Vanir War, and he states that Gullveig was burned 3 times but was reborn as Freyja, and that this constituted a hidden murder on the part of the Æsir.
I'm sorry, but fucking re.
I will mention one other thing regarding that. I just have to mention it. Sorry for interrupting you, Tristan, but this was something that kind of like, it made me go, well, it really rub in the wrong way, because there's a part of the game where you actually do get to go to Valhalla. You get to like experience like a religious vision, and you get to play as, in this case, Odin. He's not known as Odin in this case, but Freyja is present, and Freyja is portrayed, or heavily implied at least, to be Odin's wife. Like, they just gloss over this, just like, you know, she's his wife.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I would take the position that Freyja is Odin's wife. Though, of course, some other people do take the position that it's Frigg is a separate being, that it's actually Freya's mother.
You know, I'd probably argue that point, that, you know, Freyja is probably you know, something quite separate from Freyja, despite the similar names and so forth. But as Valhalla there took its liberties when it came to interpretations where there might be some sort of discussion or debate regarding who is who and what is what. And they just took the position that, yep, Freya's Odin's wife.
Okay, well, I mean, I think that's pretty reasonable. They do actually just have to take a position, right?
So
yeah, they do have to take a position, but they didn't exactly bring about the nuance of, you know, maybe there's something else, maybe this is somebody else, but no.
So here's we got some donos real quick. Noctis donates 3 lemons. Much love and many blessings, and Merry Yule to you, Mr. Noctis. And then also we have a lemon from Anglo Switchblade. Very cool name. All right, Mr. Anglo, many blessings to you. Many thanks, and have a very, very Merry Yule. You guys, I might be gone for like a week or two. I have a baby being born. My number 3, I got a baby girl on the way. She's due any day now. So I might miss out on a week, and our schedule might be a little mixed up. So anybody in the chat, folks asked how could they donate to Dave's baby. If you guys listening would like to donate to the baby for like a baby shower gift or whatever, you could just drop a dono and we'll take it for that. So because I felt a little uncomfortable opening up like a whole thing for people to donate to my baby and stuff like that. So if you do want to throw a gift to the new baby, I'll take it in the form of a dono, and I'll appreciate that. And much love and many blessings to each of you guys, and many thanks for everybody tuning in. Real quick, guys, Srujan, our boy Srujan, has something that he said, and this is alarming. He says gay shit is an option in the game.
Yeah, so I haven't actually run across any situation in which you could take a homosexual action yet. Which isn't to say that there's not any of them. I'm given to understand that... Well, see, in the game, there's an option between playing as a male or a female main character. It doesn't actually change anything. So... They didn't change any of the sexual options in the game. So if you could sleep with someone as a female, you could sleep with them as a male. Actually run into it, but it's just not really remarked upon.
They're doing the new media thing where there's no one that's gay, no one that's straight. Everyone's just some kind of bisexual. I mean, it's still like wrong to be sure, but it's kind of like how Skyrim did it and how Mass Effect did it. And, you know, well, that's just kind of the way they do it now.
I mean, to be fair, people aren't openly bisexual. It's just the game doesn't care what you choose, basically.
Right. Yeah,
it doesn't prohibit your choices.
There is a few cases I can think of where there is a female character, like a female leader of sorts, and she has an obvious crush on one of her advisors who is also female. That's the only thing I can think of that is kind of like explicitly homosexual. There's been instances where I've come across, like, you get to have, like, you know, you get the choices here to do homosexual activities, but it's very gender neutral. It's very much a line of you can play as a female character, you can play as a male character, but they didn't take the effort to like change the dialogue or the option. But it's played like gender neutral, so you can obviously tell this is more a matter of laziness instead of, you know, pushing it in a certain direction.
So,
and you know, going back to that character that, you know, was very much obviously a lesbian in love with her y'all, that raises some other issues that I had. I probably the biggest issue with in the game consistently, because it really is just thrown inside your face. There are shield maidens everywhere. They just assume that every woman in this universe is basically a rip roaring, like, foul mouthed warrior who openly talks about their sexuality and how they want to fuck someone and all that sort of thing, right? They basically talk like you would expect a 9th century Viking male to talk.
It's 2020, right?
Right. Well, I mean, it's not even so much that, like, it's just everyone, you know, acts like a normal person. It's that the Viking men act like you would expect a Viking man to act, but the Viking women also act like a Viking man.
They're almost worse.
Yeah, there, I mean, it really is almost worse.
There is actually something that I noticed there, in that I think it's fair to say 50%, I'm not kidding, 50% of every sort of soldier that you meet, be that Norse or Saxon or so forth, is going to be a woman, including bandits and so forth. They are going to, they're going to be 50% women, 50% men. Now, I encountered something in my game, and I don't know if this was a glitch or a bug or some sort, but the female voices, the female battle lines and so forth, they are remarkably louder than the male ones. So they really stand out.
You know, that might just be a factor of them having a higher pitched voice, so it's more noticeable to you.
I mean, like the volume level is actually somewhat higher on them. So I got no idea what that is, if it's just a glitch or a bug, or if it's just because, as you say, it's high pitched. Point is still, though, 50% of your raiders or any army whatsoever is going to be female.
You know, the thing that I really hate with the whole Shield Maiden narrative is that people will cherry pick, you know, certain examples like Hervor from the you know, the Tierfing cycle and whatnot, and be like, see, there were warrior women. And it's like, yeah, but these are like the daughters of kings. These are like very specific, very oftentimes like of divine ancestry type of people. They're not just like Sally Mary Sue picked up a sword and shield and was like, Dad, I'm going to be a Viking. Like, no, that's not what happened.
You know, I'll be clear. There are no historical sagas in which shield maidens actually appear.
I'm going to, you know, kind of maybe step on you a bit. The legendary cycles are where they're attested to. And I have to say, I noticed that a lot of them deal with the Goths or with the Huns and the Scythians. And, you know, they had a tradition of warrior women, not shield maiden tier stuff, but, you know, women firing bows from horseback or women being archery, because that was a thing Scythians did. Go ahead.
I mean, to be clear, when I say a historical saga, I'm talking about like the family sagas from Iceland, right? Like these are a thing that happened, right? This was a real person who did this thing with another real family who lived right there. Well, the legendary sagas are very much a narrativized mythological story. It probably happened in some sense, but it's less quote unquote real. So they have more leeway to change things and make things more grandiose. And as you say, a lot of the legendary sagas are dealing with like Valkyries or the sons of gods or something of that sort. Anyway,
they're all basically demigods. Like this isn't. It's a Valkyrie. It's not just a Mary Sue woman. This is like a woman of divine ancestry who's oftentimes quite literally, you know, a farrier of the dead.
They're literally not even a human. They're a supernatural being.
Right. And yeah, a lot of times they don't even fight. They're just depicted in armor and carrying weapons, maybe just because it correlates with what they do. You know, we don't actually have depictions of them.
That's what it is. It's iconography.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah. So,
yeah, this is like another argument that they do make all the time, though, because of like Freya being like the archetypical like warrior goddess in this case. Like they point to that too as evidence. Like, of course, like women would be allowed to fight battles because Freya does.
Look,
which is ridiculous.
Like we have so much love for our sisters that are in the faith, and we cherish them and everything like that. But when we're talking about historical accuracy and when we're talking about a traditional heathen worldview, it's woman or warrior. Pick one. There's that doesn't exist. You know, I mean, why would you send women out to fight? Women need to stay home and need to birth children to continue your species, to continue your community. You to send them off to fight and die against other men that could possibly, you know, capture them and dishonor them and rape them is absolutely ridiculous. Right. It's ridiculous.
They were a valuable, they were a resource. Like, not to be misogynistic or whatever, but women were a very valuable resource, emphasized with our ancestors' focus on wifing and concepts like that. But, a woman's worth is better spent in the home raising warriors versus trying to be one and getting her head cut off.
I mean, I'm going to be real. This isn't even a cultural issue. It's literally just biological. Men are designed to be expendable. We are warriors that are meant to be in danger, because if one man dies, that doesn't really matter to the tribe. You can lose almost all of your men, and in the next generation, you'll have the exact same number of people. But if you lose all of your women, that tribe is dead. You're gone.
Well, that's how the a lot of, you know, Celtic Gallic tribes went extinct and became basically, you know, taken over by Germans, is because all the men are dead. you know, and all the women are taken as slaves or wives or whatever. And then gradually their identity is erased and they get ground out genetically. And then those people no longer exist. They're just a relic.
We're coming up on an hour here and we got to shut it down. But we have a very generous donation from our good friend White Healing. Donates a whole guinea, dropped a ninja guinea on us. He asks, do you guys know of any good brands or sources of mead? I love this show, info, and community. And much love to you as well, Mr. White Healing. We greatly appreciate your donation and many blessings and merry Yule to you. Good brands, real quick. I don't.
That seems good.
Yeah, I don't buy mead. I got guys in my clan that brew mead, so I have free mead all the time, just homemade mead. So I'm spoiled. So I don't know where do you guys get your mead?
You know, I actually did buy some mead relatively recently from a Grownfell Meadery. And I bought two different varieties, the Old Wayfarer and the Valkyrie's Choice. I wouldn't say they're actually very good mead varieties. They're pretty
standard.
They don't have very high alcohol content, and it's more like a weak beer sort of mead. But of that, the Old Wayfarer is actually pretty good. It's tasty. I like it. I didn't like the Valkyrie's Choice, but some other people might. I'm really not a fan of hoppy bitterness flavors.
There was a bottle that my cousin gave me for Christmas years ago that I wish I could remember. It had, like, I think a picture of Olaf Tryggvason, unfortunately, on the bottle, but it was a really good bottle of mead. And I wish I could remember it. He doesn't. I've already asked him, but he doesn't remember it either.
And I'll tell you who else. I'm sorry, Andre, but our boy Kyle over in Nerona, he shipped me a bottle of mead that he made. Oh, my God. Kyle's mead is off the chain. People, he should open a meadery, this guy.
Apparently, I need to talk to Kyle.
He's great, man. It's really good.
Depending on where you're located.
I need production. Oh, sorry, Andre.
No, but like, depending on where you're located, if, for instance, I'm more familiar with like more European types of mead. Personally, I do enjoy like the Valhalla mead from Denmark. But I also, the best mead I've ever had in my entire life came from England. It was generously gifted to me by one of my friends in Northern England there. And it comes from Lindisfarne. It's literally just called Lindisfarne Mead. And it's won several awards, and it's excellent. There is also this beautiful irony that the monastery of Lindisfarne is now used to brew mead.
Well, Saxons drink mead too, man.
Oh, yeah, I know, but it's just... They are obviously going hard on the whole Viking...
Poetically just...
Yeah, the Romans thing is mead.
That thing is excellent anyways.
I think mead production as an aside is really cool, and I'm interested in organic honey production specifically because I like mead, and I think it'd be cool like for communities like ours to straight up just have their own industries.
We should corner the mead market. We should put a monopoly on it. We should do it. But, White Healing says, I don't even drink, but really want to try that Folkish treat. It's if you get some good stuff, I mean, most mead you get is you know, especially if you just get it off the shelf, a lot of times it's not great. You know, it's like anything else. But if you find a really great brand, or if you find somebody that's really talented, or make it yourself, it's not that hard to make. All you need is a carboy, one of them, the little cap things with the bottle that lets the air out. You need honey, you need water, and you need yeast. That's like pretty much all you need.
Instructions are ubiquitous on the internet. You can find 1,000 different varieties telling you how to make it.
Yeah. You can add anything you want, really, too, like berries, fruit, different stuff like that. I think blackberry mead is actually really good, but I also love blackberry flavor everything.
And there's so many.
I would agree with that.
One of these days, I got to get my kinsman is like all into mead. He's like, he's made, you know, like a lot of people don't realize there's like, you know, 30 different kinds of mead. You have one's called a sizer, which is like blended with apple cider. It's like apple cider mead mixture. You have one that's called like a melick or something like that. It's actually brewed with milk and cream. It's really, really good. You have one that's blended with wine. You got ones that are made with hibiscus and berries. And there's like so many different mead techniques. It's one of the most diverse types of drinks out there. And let me tell you, when you get your bottle of mead, you want it to be real cold, man. If you're just gonna sip on it or whatever, I'm telling you, it's my favorite alcohol. It is. I don't drink either. Like for holidays, I'll have a couple beers or a couple glasses of wine or something, or maybe during the show, or once in a while I'll have a couple glasses of wine or some beer. I'm not a big drinker anymore. I haven't been for years. But you get me sitting down with a real nice bottle of mead and some friends and stuff, we'll polish it in one night. I'm not even kidding.
You know, I started drinking it kind of for the meme of mead almost, but then it quickly did become my favorite kind of alcohol, to the point that it's the only one I would ever go out of my way to drink.
It's excellent. It's excellent. So we are coming to the end here. We got a couple minutes left. So in closing, I want to go down the line. We're going to do we'll give it a 10 rating, like 1 out of 1, 5, 10, whatever out of 10. And I want you guys to give like a yay or nay to this game. Tristan.
You know, I'll give it a 6. I like the setting a lot more than a lot of other things, but I was really let down by a lot of the gameplay.
6 out of 10. Ian.
I'm going to give it a 4, even though I've never played it, because I'm pretty dang rustled that you don't get to ever wield a one-handed sword, which was like the weapon of a Jarl or a Thane, like signature. But I do think it, just for the setting, for like the visual stuff, and frankly for the ability to go rampage on people with a Dane axe, I think that sounds pretty fun.
And Mr. Andre.
I'm going to second Tristan here and say I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10 because, honestly, the setting is interesting. It's somewhat unique, as I've never seen it this scale done by a game. But the gameplay has been frustrating, if not just generally a pain in the ass for me lately. So I will just give it a 6 out of 10 there.
6 and 6 and 4. Whew, not looking so good, Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Maybe you shouldn't have had that ridiculous Hollywood biker garb for your Vikings. So anyway, let's shut it down for this evening. This was our review of Assassin's Creed Valhalla from people that actually practice our ancestral religion and people that are members of Research Institute that is dedicated to studying and developing this religion. So this isn't coming from just some gamer channel or anything like that. This is coming from people that can I say that we're experts in this field.
We are the most qualified people who have ever reviewed this game.
Yeah, we are the most. I don't know how I feel about saying that specific sentence there. Yeah, we are the most qualified people that have ever reviewed this game. Okay,
I'm qualified to rant your ear off about the Kievan Rus and the Goths, but that's about it.
So, I mean, that's qualifications, man. But I don't think anybody that is of our faith is going to give a review of this game or pop culture or anything of that nature. So I guess this is kind of like a theological, historical review of the game here. So I hope everybody enjoyed it. Like always, make sure to go over to facebook.com/IronAgeJodish and check out some authentic ancient Vedic astrology. Our boy Neil John, you can go back and check out our episode with him. Neil John is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. This stuff will blow you away. So if you want to get a reading, or let's just check him out, go give him a like. Go over to facebook.com/IronAgeJodish and check out our boy Neil John. If you decide to get a chart and everything like that, make sure you tell him Big Dave sent you. Tell him Big Dave sent you. If you like the Bog, you support the Bog, you want to see the Bog grow, help us keep the lights on, keep the machine chugging, make sure to go over to patreon.com/thebog and sign up. We got tiers, $5 all the way up to $50 for everybody. So you can get an RSS feed for audio for every single episode that we do to listen to on your commutes, in your car, at work, or at the gym. patreon.com/thebog. If you want to support us by buying some merchandise, go over to shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop and go get yourself a t-shirt, hat, backpack, phone case, whatever you want. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff on there. So it's all good stuff, American-made stuff. Go check it out. shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop. And I got the horn out. Like always, we're going to give a hail to our most exalted patrons, the guys that help us keep the lights on and help keep the Bog going. And that is going to be a shout-out to hail to House Allen, hail to our friend Corey, and hail to our very own Andre and family. Many blessings and much love to each and every one of you. Chayil ser hola golden. Hail.
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 All right, guys. I'll see you guys next time. Maybe next Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern here on DLive.tv/Dave Martell. Maybe not, because the baby might be here. So I'll see you guys when I see you. many hails, many blessings, and everybody have a very, very merry Yule. Hail.